Anna, this is how my 5-year-old niece, Navy, begins every conversation with me. Navy is my response. Then I wait to see what is going on inside her young brain. Sometimes she just wants a snack or to play a game. Other times she makes astute, humble observations like, "Why do you look so frustrated at that old man?" Or, "Why does your face look like that?" Other times, she catches me with a big question. This past visit, it was, "Do you like to talk about God?" My hyper-internal voices of anxiety that only speak with exclamation points began quickly. "What a great question! She's my godchild. Don't screw this up. You want her to ask these questions. Don't screw this up. This is important. Don't screw this up," and on and on. Fortunately, a calmer voice said, "Take a deep breath. Just answer the question." Here's what I said. "I do like to talk about God. I like to talk about God with my family and friends. I like to talk about God so much that I do it at work. I like to talk about God so much, sometimes I even do it with a microphone in front of people. God is very important to me." Although I was not impressed with my answer, it was enough for Navy. She's 5. She's curious. And so she asked me the same question several times over the next few days. I was able to talk about how God's love is important to me. We read stories from her children's Bible. We read stories from the picture book club at St. Mark's. I read my own book, and I showed her pictures of her helping me administer communion 2 summers ago. I'm so grateful for these moments of connection. I like talking about God. I also noticed in the talking that sometimes just using words didn't feel like enough. I wanted to share even more of God's love with Navy than I could with my words. I love today's gospel because it moves us beyond just using words. This sacred story invites all 5 of our senses. It's situated in the everyday, in the home, around a table, and yet it is extravagant. It is shocking and just a little bit uncomfortable. All of this is happening between 3 siblings and friends. Lazarus, one of the siblings who sits with Jesus, had recently died and was brought back to life. Although Lazarus never speaks in the Gospel of John, being brought back to life is an action that Jesus did that ripples throughout the rest of the gospel. Lazarus's new life is so noticed by others that many begin to follow him. Certain leaders notice this and are not pleased and begin to plot the death of Jesus and murmur about even putting Lazarus to death. Martha, one of the siblings, often known for her household skills, speaks what is on her mind. In the previous story at her brother's graveside, she lets Jesus know what she feels, and she confesses Jesus as Messiah. Tonight, she is at dinner, giving what talent she has to her honored guest, her hospitality. The third sibling, Mary, has notable familiarity with Jesus too. When Jesus arrives at Lazarus's tomb, Mary says, "Lord, if you had gotten here sooner, my brother would not have died." Mary is what you see is what you get. She's generous. She's loving. Mary ignores social norms that get in the way of her love. She does this because more than any other of Jesus' followers at this point, she gets it. To anoint as Mary did happened when someone became king and when someone died. We'll read the story next week of Jesus entering triumphantly into Jerusalem, the story that follows what we read today. And he is days away at this point from his crucifixion and his death. Mary's actions also foreshadow Jesus washing his feet during his final meal with his disciples. With extravagant generosity, with a scent so strong that it probably filled the neighborhood, with the intimacy in letting down her hair, with no words, Mary responds to what is going to happen to Jesus and expresses the deep love she feels for him. For those of us following in the way of Jesus today, Mary demonstrates the reciprocal and mutual love that God calls each of us into. What makes this even more surprising and hopeful is that Mary is not one of the official 12 apostles. Those apostles still don't quite get it. She is an everyday person. Judas, one of those 12 apostles, is at the table too. He doesn't get it. He's wrapped up in the efficient answers of here and now. His exchange with Jesus deserves a full homily or several at another time. As a quick aside, though, Jesus' response to Judas is in no way an invitation to ignore the poor. I'll gladly dig into this with anyone over a tea or email. Every person at that table is important in that they show us ways to live our life of faith. It's Mary's really unrestrained love that is speaking to me right now. How can we be more like Mary? I'm not sure yet. Mary's extravagant love is not a way that I'm naturally oriented. It is a way of being, or even a spiritual practice that I'm curious about and exploring. Something I am noticing, though, is the question with which I began this homily is a part of my answer. My faith has grown a lot from studying theologians, cultural leaders, and thought leaders. And I have a lot more to learn from such people. When we're talking, though, about extravagant, reciprocal love, it is spending time with children that really expands my heart and softens it. I have spent a big chunk of the past 4 Lents with my young niece and nephew. They are not burdened by cultural expectations of proper behavior. They're 3 and 5. Their curiosity, their wonder, and their full trust gets me out of my efficient adult brain and inspires me to wonder about life through childlike eyes and their many, many questions. If I could answer Navy's question again, I would keep my answer the same. I would also add, I like to talk about God. I often experience God in conversation with others like you. I'm currently curious about how I show God's love without using words. Navy, I wonder what you think and notice. As I engage with this question and Mary's story in the weeks leading up to Easter, I could hope for answers that are easily followed instructions to engage a more Mary-like life. Somehow, faith rarely seems to work that way. Instead, I hope for the wisdom to notice and act on small moments of transformation that open me more to expressing God's extravagant, reciprocal love. I hope these things for all of us.